That's fine. Huh? Yeah, well, I could do that. If you really want to see me that close, Barry, I could do that. I'll give some other people a couple minutes. Wanda, you chase them all away? Huh? Your crew's gone? Well, I'll go ahead and get started. We're going through a series about teaching, and we're picking things out of Acts and other books to talk about it. And this morning, it's going to talk about Paul. It's actually Acts chapter 17 that I'm going to be going through. In chapter 17, he goes to three places. He goes to Thessalonica, Berea, and then finally Athens. 1, 2, 3 follows the direction that he went in. See, up here first at Thessalonica, Berea, which is pretty close, and then all the way down here south he comes to Athens. Which one of the missionary journeys of this is for Paul? Acts chapter 17 ought to be a good clue.
He's in Athens.
It's in 17, it's late. First, second, or third? You can certainly rule out the first. So you got a 50-50 chance of getting it right.
Well, on the chart it says the third.
Well, that's no, it's the third place he went in Acts chapter 17. Huh? Second? No, that wasn't a missionary journey. That was a captive journey. It's three. It's his third. And so we're going to talk about it, this particular area, this morning. So it kind of all circles around this one. This is about Paul in Athens, but I wanted to talk about Thessalonica and Berea as a comparison in how things went in Athens. So, first at Thessalonica. Now, when they had traveled through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. And according to Paul's custom, he went to them. And for three Sabbaths, he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining, giving evidence that Christ had to suffer and rise again from the dead, and saying, "This is Jesus, whom I am proclaiming to you, is the Christ." So, where'd Paul go to teach? Synagogue. Okay. But who was Paul really the apostle sent to go proclaim the message to? Speak up, Wanda. She said Gentiles too? I got two whisperers. Okay, the Gentiles. Acts 13, he kind of got fed up at this particular point. It was in his first journey. And he said, okay, you Jews, you don't want to listen to him like that. I'm sent to the Gentiles. I'm going to go to the Gentiles. Kind of didn't stick with it, but I always thought that was interesting. There's 12 apostles, right? 11 of them went to the Jews and one of them went to the Gentiles. Percentage-wise, in the population of the whole world, what was the difference between how many percentage-wise were Jews versus how many were Gentiles? Huh? It was probably 90 to 95% Gentiles, maybe 5% Jews. So 11 for 5% and 1 for the other 95. I always thought that was kind of an interesting way. So why would he go to the synagogue? Huh? He was a Jew. He's not a Jew. He's a Christian now. Yeah. Okay. The people who are most familiar with the scriptures, they're going to be in a synagogue. The people who were seeking God or at least supposedly seeking God, they're going to be in a synagogue. So that's where he started. Were there ever Gentiles in and around the synagogue? Yeah. Yeah. Well, proselyted, but there were Gentiles that were interested in hearing what these Jews were talking about. What was Paul's message? It's a really simple message. The gospel, yeah. Christ died and he was resurrected. Very simple message. So moving on, and some of them were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, along with a large number of the God-fearing Greeks and a number of the leading women. But the Jews, becoming jealous and taking along some wicked men from the marketplace, formed a mob and set the city in an uproar. And attacking the house of Jason, they were seeking to bring them out to the people. Who were persuaded? This is easy. Some of the Jews, but a whole bunch of the Gentiles. Kind of interesting, the mix. How about those who weren't persuaded? They weren't happy at all with his presence. They recruited wicked men. Wicked men. What would we call wicked men that he recruited? Kind of in our vernacular. How about thugs or punks? That's what they went and recruited. The lowlifes that would go, you pay them a little bit of money and they'll go take care of somebody. Hypocritical? God's people going hiring thugs to go do their work? Pretty hypocritical. Why'd they want to bring the people out of Jason's house? To find Paul. That's what they thought. They wanted to punish them, turn over the authorities, because they couldn't find Paul, they couldn't find Silas. So let's take care of this. Let's make sure nobody welcomes anybody of this cult, which is what they were probably referring to it still then. You know, Christianity. Let's keep those people away and nobody else will receive anybody in like that. So they went and found anybody who could possibly be persuaded and said, okay, we're gonna stamp this thing out. So they were pretty aggressive about it. I mean, they didn't get Paul and Silas, so they went after the people who opened their house up. And we're hospitable.
You know, the problem was, of course, they looked at the new movement as an unauthorized situation.
Oh, yeah.
In their minds, they were so steeped in the old law. But their problem was, Paul pointed it out in Romans 10, verse 2, he said he observed that they had a zeal toward God, but not according to knowledge.
Yeah. But now they've got knowledge. And they refused to listen to it. Yeah, they were still, you know, this obviously is in Thessalonica. So this is the Hellenistic Jews. This isn't the Jews in Jerusalem. But they still have the same problem, right? They're still expecting that, even in Thessalonica, they would still be expecting that Super David to come in. Now, in Thessalonica, it's a little bit harder maybe for them to kind of put it in perspective, because certainly what happened in the Seleucid Empire, where the Maccabees overthrew the influence of the Seleucid Empire and established them as an independent nation, when David established them as a big, powerful nation and like that, I don't know how this would translate into Thessalonica very well, but yeah, that certainly was what they were looking for, was that earthly king that they could follow that was going to make them great again. And certainly you can see in the personality of the Jews that are here is to say, we want to be great, but we want our individual and distinct personality and culture to be maintained as Jews. When they did not find him, they began dragging Jason and some brethren before the city authorities, shouting, "These men who have upset the world have come here also, and Jason has welcomed them. And they all act contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, Jesus." They stirred up the crowd in the city and authorities who heard these things. And when they had received a pledge from Jason and the others, they released him. So, if you can't find who you're looking for, you grab the next guy that you can. So what did they do when they couldn't find Paul or Silas? That's what I just said. They took out the people who welcomed Paul and Silas, and they manipulated. They manipulated the crowds. They stirred up the crowds. Sound familiar? It's exactly what they did with Christ. Same modus operandi as they did with dealing with Christ and the Jews. What do you think the pledge was? Doesn't tell you. Huh? Money? Okay, that may have been what the pledge was. We don't know if the pledge was money, and in other words, I secured a bond that I wouldn't do this again. Might have been that. So that's Thessalonica. They get run out, right? Got a message, teaches, people are converted, gets run out. Berea. The brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. And when they had arrived, they went in the synagogue of the Jews. Now these were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. Therefore many of them believed, along with a number of prominent Greek women and men. How far is it from the two places? They got there overnight. It's not far. They're pretty close to each other. Where'd Paul go to teach? Synagogue. How's it different here than it was in Thessalonica? More noble-minded. That's what my translation has. Yours have a different one than noble-minded? Churches can certainly get off if they're not checking what somebody is teaching, even what I'm teaching. If I don't have it backed up in Scripture, then you ought to ask questions.
It was Paul that was doing the speaking.
Yeah, it was Paul.
They backed up what he said with the word.
Yeah, they went and it says in here, they searched the Scriptures daily to see whether what he was, he was obviously quoting out of Isaiah, probably a lot, might have Malachi. Several books, and probably even went back into Genesis. Remember the promise? Remember the promise, the three promises that were made. So he probably was teaching all there, and they flipping back in there to say, somebody never really put together this in the way that we have it. And so they were more noble-minded, as I said. They were eager to receive the word, and they verified it, as you said. They verified what was there. They looked up what Paul was talking about, because Paul wasn't saying in this chapter, I'm guessing. But he was talking about it when Isaiah talked about this, and they found where Isaiah specifically said it. Not sure why I was asking. Who else was? Who else was converted? A number of the Greeks were also converted. They were not Jews. But when the Jews of Thessalonica found out that the word of God had been proclaimed by Paul and Berea also, they came there as well, agitating and stirring up the crowds. Then immediately the brethren sent Paul out as far as the sea, and Silas and Timothy remained there. Now those who escorted Paul brought him as far as Athens, and receiving a command from Silas and Timothy to come to him as soon as possible, they left. Excuse me. So, again, We have the Jews from Thessalonica that aren't satisfied with just being in Thessalonica. Again, it's close, so it isn't that far of a trip. What happened with all the success? I would say Berea was a lot more of a success in the way things turned out, because the persecution was immediate in Thessalonica. All those people who converted and were following the teachings of Paul, what do you think the Jews were doing to them in Thessalonica? Persecuting them, threatening them. But what happened with all his success in Berea? Troublemakers. They aren't satisfied with their city. This is a personal thing against Paul. So it wasn't just, you did this to our city. We have a problem with this guy, and we got to stamp this guy out. Who does it remind you of as far as someone with that zeal to stamp out the word? Paul. When Paul, before Paul was converted, he was this kind of a Jew. So he understood their mentality. What did the Bereans do? They moved Paul out of the city. And I think they had Silas and Timothy remaining there but they probably hit him. When they came from Thessalonica, this is a guess, they didn't really know Berea that well. They knew where Paul and Silas were staying in Thessalonica, but they didn't know specifically where they were. So they didn't know where to find them. But they did get Paul out. They got him as far as Athens. And they may have been hidden in Berea, but Paul, as soon as he got to Athens, sent for Silas and for Timothy. Now, that took a while. They had to sail. Isn't it the Aegean Sea right there to the right of Greece? They had to sail through the Aegean Sea to come down around the tip to come up to Athens. It's not a short trip. How far is it? Very far. Took a while. Took days for Paul to get to Athens. So we're in Athens. Now, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he was observing the city full of idols. So he was reasoning in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles, and in the marketplace every day with those who had happened to be present. Same question. But what was the city of Athens like? Very busy. Packed with people, lots of idol worship. Full of paganism. Judaism would have been insignificant in this city. Where'd Paul go to teach? This is easy. The synagogue. Okay? Where else did he go? Marketplace. Yep, where the people were. He went where people were. That we're talking. Why the marketplace? A lot of people there. And when he went to the synagogue, if it was a minor, you know, if you went to something somewhere like Berea or somewhere like Thessalonica, they didn't have a lot of pagan gods there. They had a few, but it wasn't like Athens. But there would have been a lot more people, a lot more center in the synagogues there. But in Athens, no, not hardly at all. So this is kind of what it looks like. You've got Areopagus, which is right here, Mars Hill. And this is where they're going to actually ask him to go. But you can see what's around it. The Hill of the Nymphs, the Palladium, the Hill of the Mutes, the Areopagus, and the Parthenon is over here. Who's the pagan god that's the sponsor for Athens? It's in the name, Ath. Athena. Okay? And her shrine is up here in this area. So this is the tallest one. This is the Acropolis is the highest one. Mars Hill is a little bit lower, and this is where they had a lot of discussion. This is a big, big temple here to Athena. Well, that was, yeah, and that kind of takes me to this page. This is Agora down in the marketplace area, and I picked out a couple. Hephaestion, something like that. That's the temple to Hephaestus. Hephaestus was the god of metalworking and fire. You had the Stoa of Zeus. They had altar of the 12 gods. I don't know who the 12 gods were. Temple of Ares. Diphonian down here. So you had all this in here. This is an open theater for people talking and plays and things like that. And they think somewhere in this region was where the synagogue was. So it was in the middle of that mess. But you can see, I mean, there's buildings all over the places, and I didn't try and put them all on here, but some of these are marketplace, and some of these are temples, so they were all interspersed with each other. So if you were there, you were around all of that stuff all the time when you were down in Athens. And there's a lot of discussions. But the big discussions occurred on Mars Hill, which is named after Mars, which is Ares, which is the god of war. So, and some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers were conversing with him. Some were saying, what would this idle babbler wish to say? Others, he seems to be a proclaimer of strange deities because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, may we know that this new teaching is which you are, may we know what this new teaching is which you are proclaiming. For you are bringing some strange things to our ears. So we want to know what these things mean. Now all the Athenians and the strangers visiting there used to spend their time in nothing other than telling or hearing something new. Kind of gives you another indication of just how prominent the synagogue was. They hadn't heard anything like this. So they really didn't know a whole lot about what was going on about the Word of God at all. Who were the philosophers that held discussions with Paul? At least that are identified here.
Going back to what you just said, you've mentioned several times, you know, that the Jews were against Paul. Mm-hmm. Paul was preaching Christ and his death and resurrection, but the Jews were always saying, you know, we're of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So those that were in the synagogue weren't thinking of Christ.
That's
so
true.
They weren't professing Christ.
They weren't professing Christ, but they would have talked about the things that were in the Old Testament that had happened and about this God. And they would have been, at least, they wouldn't have known about the resurrection, but they would have heard about a Messiah. If they'd have been around the Jews, they'd have heard about a Messiah.
The Jews didn't believe that Christ was the Messiah.
No, they didn't. Well, some of the Jews didn't. Some of the Jews did. It depends on where their hearts were.
At this point in time, quite a few Jews did.
It was strictly the Jews. Cornelius.
Of a Gentile.
Yeah.
Being baptized.
Yep. That's true.
They were highly educated, but they were Greek.
They were highly educated, but what?
But they were Greek.
Yeah, they were Greek. Yeah. Good. I was moving along a little bit ahead of schedule, so that's good. Any other questions, comments? This is a tough city. So who are these philosophers? It's interesting they picked these two. Okay. This isn't hard. It's right there in the first verse. Thank you. Okay, so What's notable about those two? What do Epicureans believe? Philosophers.
They
The pursuit of pleasure. Yeah, well, they had kind of itching ears, but yeah, they were listening.
They were always looking for
something new. I want to hear something new. Yeah. But the Epicureans were, if it feels good, do it. Pleasure. What were the Stoics? What? They were the opposite. This is the yin and the yang. The Stoics said, deny yourself of everything. So it's kind of interesting, he picked the two polar opposites. And they were sitting there together, two polar opposite philosophies, talking to Paul. What was their opinion of Paul?
Well, they didn't really know much about Paul, except that he was bringing something strange.
Something strange. Okay, some thought he was a nut, an idle babbler, a proclaimer of strange deities, because there wasn't anything that they had heard about a God that died and resurrected from the dead.
It was something new.
If something new, okay, let's debate it. Okay, I loved my sister, but my sister, if you took a position, she'd take the other opposite position just because she liked to argue. And I kind of, with the folks that were there in Athens, they like to debate. They like to push and look at new ideas and things like that. But that's not really seeking the truth. That's just, I like the stimulation of the discussion. And it's hard to teach someone who just likes to have the stimulated discussion. They're not really looking for the truth. Huh? And people who say, well, the church needs to change to accommodate me.
Yeah.
No, you need to change to accommodate God's word. Otherwise, it becomes the church of you instead of the church of Christ. What was Paul teaching?
Jesus resurrection.
Huh?
Jesus and the resurrection.
Same message. Which we call the gospel.
You know, he said in Romans 1:16 that he wasn't ashamed of that gospel.
Right.
He says, for the power of God and salvation to the Jew first, and also
to the Gentile.
To the Gentile. And then in 1 Corinthians 2:2, he reminded them that when he came to them in Corinth for the first time, he failed not to give them anything but the gospel. He didn't come with eloquent words or anything. He just wanted to present the gospel. That's all that anybody needs to put on Christ if they will believe it. When they hear that, the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, if they accept that and believe it, you know, it's like the Ethiopian eunuch.
Mm-hmm. Philip. It what prevents me from being baptized. What prevents me from being baptized? Yep.
Philip said, if you believe with all your heart, you may.
Yep.
And so it's the hearing of Christ, the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. Will it sincerely believe it?
And it shows you the starting point when you're teaching someone. He always started the same spot, the gospel. You need to understand who Christ is, what he did for you, how much love he has, how much love the Father has for you, and how much power there is. And if that gets established, then you can start to teach other things. But if you can't get that where people are working on the same page, like Paul in Athens, he never got anywhere except with a very, very few people. What was their reaction to Paul's teaching?
Some believed.
Most of them said, we want you to come up to Mars Hill. We want you to talk about it there. So Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I observe you are very religious in all respects. For while I was passing through and examining the objects of your worship, I also found an altar with the inscription, 'To an unknown God.' Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you." So he's up there. He's got a big group now. Most likely, this is the big debating area. They didn't know much. Either that or they just kind of said, "Oh, that's a crazy group over there," and they didn't listen to them. Hard to say. But they didn't know much about God. How does Paul begin his appeal here? Where they were. Yeah, we'll start with where you are. He looked at their culture. He looked at what they had, and he said, "How do I capture their interest? How do I get them to listen to what I'm saying?" Now, Paul, he said, "I'm going to be to the person I'm trying to convert as a Roman. I'll be like a Roman. To a Jew, I'll be like a Jew. To a Jew." In other words, he was trying to say, I'll walk that extra mile to try and reach you. And that's what he's trying to do, is try and reach these people here. That's what you do, isn't it?
You try to.
I kind of wondered about what he had, a term that he used that might have irritated him a little bit. Maybe not. These people, what did these people think of their intellect? They were smart. I just kind of wondered about, they worship in ignorance. I know if I use that in our culture with someone, even though they were ignorant, they'd turn me off like in an instant. Susan?
But to them, they thought they wanted to know everything.
Yeah.
So they're like, "Hey, there's something that we don't know about." That was the hook that every teacher looks for to get pulled into students in. And when Dad was in Japan and Korea, he would always look for just that type of thing, because they were the same way. They would teach in Japan and Korea, and they would just add God to their gods. So he actually had to deal with that.
Yep. And that was frustrating. I know it was frustrating for your dad when he taught there in Korea. He says, "I've taught him about God, and all they did was add him to the list." Very frustrating. Yep. "The God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of all mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined that their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far off from each one of us." So he goes a little bit more teaching than just the gospel itself. But he's taught the gospel, and now he's starting to build on it. Or he's at least trying to. So what is Paul comparing God to? What?
To me, he's going back to, I don't think Zeus was there. But
Zeus was there.
Their imperial god was who they felt created all things. And so he's saying, if you don't teach them about God, teaching them that Jesus is God's son, is it going to do them any good?
And who he is, as far as a god. Here he's comparing him to the pagan gods. He says, he doesn't need to have somebody service him. He doesn't need you to build a temple to dwell in it, or like that, because he made everything. The guy has one. How's God different than the pagan gods? Because that's what he's contrasting, is that difference. It's a living God. Yeah. There's not this pantheon.
You think about the God of the and they go in the next morning and they open the door, they're going to fall over. So mm-hmm. they set him back up, and the next morning they go in and open the door, and he fell and broke off his hands and on the threshold of the door. And they thought, well, we can't have this God
yep.
with us. And they were trying to get rid of it, passing it on to other Philistine cities, and the mm-hmm. other Philistine cities didn't want it, so they finally
sent it back. Yep.
Because the God of everything was a lot more powerful than the god Dagon.
Dagon. Wasn't that a fish god? Wasn't Dagon a fish god?
I don't know about that.
Okay. But yeah, he made everything. He doesn't need men to provide for him. He wants men to serve him because they love him, but doesn't need to be serviced like those gods needed to be serviced there in Athens. And they had all kinds of things they did supposedly for their different gods. What was every man made to do? Every man and woman. But what was everyone made to do?
God created man in his image to worship.
Yeah. And since he created man and he created everything, he created in man a desire to seek God, right? That's inside of people. Now, some people shove it down, bury it where you can't see it, but that was part of it. There's that innate part of us that wants to seek God. Now, they've been seeking God, but they've been seeking the wrong God, right? They've been seeking all these, you know, is the God I'm seeking after Athena, who is the God for Athens, or is it Ares or Mars, or is it, you know, who's this God? And so Paul was hoping for some success with the people to say, you've been searching for him. You've got this unknown God. Here he is. And that desire inside of you to seek God, okay, I'm telling you about him. Here's who he is. Right, which was also taking another, because they had, in you know, big, huge statue of Athena and the Parthenon. They had, I'm sure, in the Stoa of Zeus, they had a statue of Zeus and a Hephaestus in his temple. They had one of him, probably doing some iron work or something like that. So they had all these physical gods, man-created gods. For in him we live and move and exist. As even some of your poets have said, for we also are his children. Being then the children of God, we ought not to think that divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and thought of man. Therefore, having overlooked the times of ignorance, God is now declaring to men that all people everywhere should repent, because he has fixed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness through a man whom he has appointed, having furnished proof to all men by raising him from the dead. So he's driving his point home. Since he's got this large group here like that, he's driving his point home. What is Paul now comparing God to? And I think someone mentioned it earlier, a couple times. Again, to the pagan gods, but specifically, the reference to the poets. So he's pulling in more about those gods. He's saying gold and silver and stone. In other words, all these statues you've got around here, you had to create those. Athena didn't come down and say, there's a statue of me that you can worship. You had to make it. You know? God doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to have any image. The reference to the poets, again, he's trying to reach them where they're at and bring them along. Said, hey, even your poets talked about this. Now, the one that I found was probably Aratus. He wrote a poem, Phenomena. Talked about astronomy, meteorological science. It opens with the invocation, but this is to Zeus. But he used what they had to try and appeal to him. In other words, he walked to where they were and then tried to bring them to God. And a little bit more about this one. That's why it's kind of in gray. What comparison is Paul making between God and the pagan gods? And I think I talked about that, didn't I? Yeah. What's different in his message that he talked about in Thessalonica and Berea and here in Athens, at least to what we have? He talked about the gospel, the death and the resurrection is what he talked about that we have recorded in Berea and Thessalonica. Here he talked about creation, he talked about creating everything, and he says he created everything in the beginning, and guess what? At the judgment at the end, the one that I've been talking about that died and was resurrected, he's the one who's going to judge everything. So he expanded what he talked about, that the world would be judged by Christ, which was a little bit more. I think he was trying to move them because he didn't feel like they were moving enough. He says, you understand the consequence of not listening is because this person who you're saying, that's crazy, strange God you're talking about, that's the God that's going to judge everybody at the end. But he was the Word. He is the Word, actually, not the was.
The power of God, you know, it's just like there's certain books in the New Testament, like Mark, that was good for Romans because it dealt with the power that God had. And these people, that's what they paid attention to. And that's what he's showing. You've got to start there.
Start with what? What will motivate? The people that were in the synagogues were seeking after God, and they were using a reference to the scriptures. These people weren't even on the same basis of who he was trying to teach in the synagogue. They never even looked at the scriptures. They didn't know, probably a lot of them didn't even know the scriptures existed. So he was teaching on a different basis. One more slide. Then when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some began to sneer, but others said, we shall hear you again concerning this. So Paul went out of their myths. But some men joined him and believed. Among them were Dionysus, the Areopagite, and a woman named Damaris, and others with him. The reaction, particularly when he said, this God, first of all, allowed people to kill him. How powerful a God can he be? But then he rose from the dead. Some of us are probably saying, oh, come on, you got to be kidding me. Sneered at him, right? Some rejected it, but others were indifferent.
Well, when it comes to the Jews, the Pharisees believed in the resurrection. The Sadducees did not.
Did not. That's true. They didn't have the strong reaction like they had in the other two cities. But it was the same message. Paul's reaction. He moved on. So how much success did Paul have in Athens? Some, he had some who joined him, some believed. Did the message vary? No. Why was the response different? It was their mindset, wasn't it? It was their hearts. Yeah, you know, there's the parable of the sower that talks about good soil, bad soil, rocky soil. That's what this is. This is that parable from Christ. Is Athens was rotten soil. Very few people who were converted. Berea was really, really good soil. Thessalonica was pretty good soil. It's kind of interesting. Berea was such good soil, but we don't have a letter from Paul that he wrote to Berea after he had gone there. But we have letters to Thessalonica, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. It's kind of interesting. And nothing to Athens, which makes sense. I guess the point I'm trying to get to is you have to teach the gospel, realizing that you're going to run into good soil, not so good soil, and rocky soil. But keep sowing.
The reward is in your presenting is whether they accept it or not, you have no control.
No, you don't. And you shouldn't beat yourself up by saying, you know, nobody's listening. It's not your fault. Nobody's listening. As long as you get opportunities and take care of it and take advantage of those opportunities, God's happy. Well, they may come back later on and talk to you about it. Unfortunately, it may be some significant event that occurs in their life that changes their mind to say, I need to look at things a little bit deeper in life than maybe the way I've been looking at them superficially. But thank you. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your comments.